Imagine with me what it would have been like to be among the first witnesses to the resurrection. Now, when we first hear that, we might think, oh, wouldn't that be amazing and inspirational? Do you think so? What do you think? Like, what do you think it would be like if you were among those first, especially those first women, to see that the tomb was empty? What do you think it would be like? Let's just hear a few answers.
Unbelievable.
That's a good word.
Frightening.
Yeah. Speechless. Yes. Because we might imagine that moment. See, now with 2,000 years of perspective, we look back on that and go, oh, that'd be so inspiring. That would just be so faith-building. That would be amazing. And it is. And it was. But in the moment of it, in the actual experience of it, from those who experienced it first, it would have been confusing, bewildering, unbelievable,
skeptical,
good word,
angering,
another good word. See, here's the timeline, and we've heard part of the story at the beginning of the service. So the first part of activity happened right around daybreak. So several of the women that were disciples, they were followers of Jesus, many of whom had witnessed his crucifixion, they went to the tomb expecting to anoint his body with spices. At the time when Jesus died and when he was put in the tomb, it was late enough in the day. There really wasn't adequate time to do all the respectful things that you would do for someone you loved who had just died. So they wanted to go do that. And so they make their way to the place where they know Jesus was buried. They saw him go into that tomb late on Friday. But what they see is a stone that is rolled away. They look inside the tomb and there's nobody there. And if that doesn't set off alarms, I don't know what will. Mary Magdalene immediately runs back to tell the disciples, and some of the other women remain. And they encounter the angels, the two angels that say that he's not here, he has risen. And then because I don't know what you would do if you encountered an angel, but most of the time in the Bible when that happens to people, they just plain freak out. And these women, they were faithful disciples, so they faithfully freaked out. I don't know if that's a verb, but they, in fear, went back to tell the disciples. Peter and John, they hear about it. And so they come running, and they check things out, and it's exactly as the women have said. The tomb is empty. They go inside. They see grave clothes still there. And if that isn't strange enough, because if the body is stolen, the grave clothes would have been as well. They don't know what to do. They rush off. Mary Magdalene, of course, she is followed behind them. Now she goes in and she sees that the tomb is empty. She sees the grave clothes. And then unlike Peter and John, who just took right off, she lingered. She wept. And as she did, she encountered those same two angels who told her a very similar thing. And then she turns around and she sees someone. She thinks he's a gardener. Thinks he's somebody who works there, and asks him, "Do you know where they took the body of Jesus?" Not knowing that she was speaking to Jesus. She didn't recognize him. We're going to come back to that theme in just a minute. She didn't recognize him until Jesus spoke to her. This seemingly stranger, this gardener. Oh, that's interesting. Good singing voice. Said to her, "Mary." And she immediately recognized the voice. "Rabboni," she said. And so Jesus, this resurrected Jesus, who she thinks is the gardener, can't quite recognize him, but she can recognize the voice. He tells her to go tell the disciples which she goes and does, and none of them believe her. None of them. They think she's out of her mind. And so all of this happens right around daybreak. Let's say between 6 o'clock and 8 o'clock in the morning. We don't know exactly, but right around daybreak. And then at noon, nothing. 1 o'clock, nothing. 2 o'clock, do you know? Nothing. You would think that the greatest event in history would be on a tighter timeline. But apparently, the Lord didn't plan it that way. In fact, and here's one of the, there's two takeaways I hope you receive today. First one is this. It's actually the way that the testimonies of the resurrection are written should actually increase our confidence in them. Because, you know, if as some have rightly said, I mean, some people would say, the resurrection is this really inspiring story that the early church made up to try to, you know, like convince people and give them hope and peace. But, you know, if you were writing a really great story, if you were inventing a story, you wouldn't invent a story like this. You'd invent something with a nice, clean plot line, you know, and then Luke and the X-ring fighter with the impossible shot, you know, it goes down into the exhaust tube and the Death Star blows up and it was amazing. A good, clean plot. But when we read the gospel accounts, it reads more like a crime scene. It's all this disjointed kind of stuff that would happen in eyewitness testimony. Everyone's adding their own little details to it. It takes a little bit to put it all together. You have to sort of detective it out to put all the pieces together. That is one of the marks, one of the internal marks in the Bible of its authority and its authenticity, because no one would invent a story like this. In fact, right down to this point, in the first century, in the Roman Empire, women were not considered, don't shoot me, women. Women were not considered reliable witnesses. And here, in all four gospel accounts of the resurrection, women are the first witnesses. Apparently, the Lord didn't really care too much for Roman law. But even that fact ended up becoming problematic in the early church as they're trying to convince people of the resurrection. If you were inventing the story of the resurrection, you would never write it the way that it's written. And yet, here it is. Eyewitness accounts. And it's in the odd little details of the resurrection that we see their authenticity, including the story that we're going to look at today. Now, we have been in Luke chapter 24, and I'd like us to pick things up. I'm going to take my reading glasses and put them on because this is going to really help us all. in verse 13, Luke 24, verse 13, as we pick up the story, not at 1 in the afternoon, not at 2 in the afternoon, probably about 3:30 or 4 in the afternoon that same Sunday. All this dramatic stuff happens at daybreak, and then a whole lot of nothing. Whole lot of disbelief, whole lot of confusion, whole lot of people not believing Mary Magdalene, by the way. And we pick the story right up here. Okay. Now that same day, two of them, so two disciples. Now one we get to know in a few moments. His name is Cleophas. And this is also an interesting mark of the resurrection story because he doesn't show up anywhere prior to this moment. If you were going to invent a story of the resurrection, you would have the first witnesses be people that are already written about. They'd be somebody important. Cleophas really isn't. He doesn't even later become a leader in the early church. He's just a dude. He's just a guy who's been a follower of Jesus and is aware that Jesus has died. And then there's another disciple with him, that goes unnamed. And I'll tell you in a few minutes my own hunch on who that is. That doesn't mean that I'm right. But this, so these two disciples were going to a village called Emmaus. Now, many scholars have wondered where Emmaus is. The only thing we really know is the other part of this verse. It's about 7 miles from Jerusalem. Now there's a village in Gaza Strip that's a Palestinian settlement now called El Kebaba that is about 3.5 miles northwest of Jerusalem. There's a very good chance this is where the village of Emmaus, the historical village of Emmaus, was. So they're walking along, in which case that would mean that Luke was listing the 7 miles as the round trip. Like, he was just thinking about like how a person in Jerusalem would think about the trip. It's about 7 miles because you got to go there. There's nothing there. And then you come back. They're making this trip to Emmaus and they're talking with each other about everything that happened. As they talked and discussed these things with each other, Jesus himself came up and walked along with them. But they were kept from recognizing him. So here's the second appearance of Jesus. And now when Mary Magdalene saw Jesus, she didn't know. So there's been some really interesting questions raised by this. Notice it's in passive tense. All my, who's English teachers? English teachers in the room? Yeah, okay. Passive tense, even passive tense in the Greek, doesn't tell us why they were kept from recognizing him. It doesn't even specifically say God kept them from recognizing him. Now, that could be the case. It could, because God can do anything he wants, but usually he takes credit for it in the Bible. They were kept from recognizing him. Now, some people have wondered if the resurrected Jesus just plain looked differently. Like one of the things that scholars speculate about is, what will your resurrected body be like? Because resurrection is different from resuscitation. There have been people in the Bible thus far that have been like brought back from the dead. They've been resuscitated, like Lazarus. So he was dead. Jesus called him out of the grave. He comes back to life, but he's in the same body. Jesus is resurrected from the dead. And now, apparently, from the way that Mary Magdalene saw him, or the way that these travelers on the road saw him, he didn't look just like he did when he died. I mean, he would have been covered in blood. His body would have been swollen from the most horrible treatment that you could imagine happening to somebody. You would notice that if somebody who looked like that came and walked alongside you. You'd know, you're like, wah! You know, you'd be scared on a whole different level, right? So people have wondered, you know, what do our resurrected bodies look like? So one of the speculations, this is just playing around with it a little bit, is that maybe when we're resurrected, we are kind of resurrected to the kind of version 2.0 of the same bodies, but we're resurrected essentially at the prime of life. So, you know, maybe your resurrected body you'll look like you looked like when you were a freshman in college. Who thinks that's a good idea? I'm all for that. Lord, if you're taking votes on the resurrection, I vote for that. That sounds great. Side note, okay, on Thursday nights we have potlucks here at the church. And hope you'll check them out. Now, I work with our teenagers quite a bit. I just love teenagers, our high schoolers. When you watch a high schooler at a potluck, oh man, it's like poetry of consumption. Because like these beautiful human beings, they legitimately need like 5,000-6,000 calories a day because they're growing like crazy. And I just watch them as they make their way, like they kind of harvest their way through the potluck table. And I just think, I remember when I could have done that. Remember? It's just like, I wish I could do that again. I used to be able to eat like half a pizza and still feel good, you know? Like, so maybe, anyways, maybe our resurrected bodies will be like in the prime of life. And so in which case, we can understand why Mary Magdalene and these disciples would have had a really hard time when they see, you know, 33-year-old Jesus looking like 21-year-old Jesus. You know, 2 days, you know, 3 days before that, on, you know, that Friday afternoon, you know, they'd seen him bloodied and bruised and just absolutely in the, like, horrible human condition. And here he is looking like all, like, great, like Instagram great kind of thing. I don't know. Could be because of, maybe they were so traumatized by the events they witnessed on that Friday afternoon. They were like many of us who have gone through anything traumatic in our worlds have just, for a time, just gotten smaller. Like they just can't see it. But whatever the reason, they were kept from recognizing him. So let's keep reading, because it gets better, even better. He, Jesus, asked them, "So what are you discussing together as you walk along?" He's asking this question. So they stood still, they stopped walking, and their faces were downcast. One of them, Cleophas, he asked Jesus this. "Are you the only one visiting Jerusalem who doesn't know the things that have happened in these days?" Looking the Lord and Savior of the universe in the eyes, saying, "Are you clueless?" "What things?" Jesus asked. Just pause here. Do you think Jesus enjoyed this? I kind of think he did. "Oh, what things? Do tell." "Oh, about Jesus of Nazareth," Cleophas replied. "He was a prophet. He was powerful in word and deed before God and all the people. The chief priests and our rulers handed him over to be sentenced to death, and they crucified him. But we had hoped that he would be the one who would redeem Israel. And what's more, it's now the third day since all this took place. And in addition, some of our women amazed us. They went to the tomb early this morning, but didn't find the body. They came and told us they'd had a vision of angels who said he was alive. Some of our companions went to the tomb, and they found it just as the women had said, but they did not see Jesus." Tells us a couple things. One, Cleophas, he's already dismissed Mary Magdalene. And just enjoy the irony of this moment with me, okay? They are walking with Jesus. Jesus has asked them questions, and now Cleophas is explaining Jesus to Jesus, including the story of, "Oh, our companions, they didn't see him." And they're looking right at him as they say that. I mean, do you think, I just think Jesus would have enjoyed this moment. Like, this is divine comedy. Jesus has gone through the most horrific situation imaginable. Now he's got a brand new life, maybe even the 21-year-old body, I don't know. And he's walking with some of the folks that he's known who were there, who watched him crucified, and he's having a conversation with them. They are looking right at him, and they haven't a clue. And yet, don't we do the same kind of thing? Like, we walk with Jesus, and often we don't see him with us. Or maybe you've explained Jesus to Jesus. Maybe you've been, and I don't say this to merely make fun of anyone, or because I do the same thing. This is more just the irony of the human condition. You know, all those times, you know, it's the middle of the night, and you're just saying, "God, it just feels like you've abandoned me. God, this world doesn't make sense. God, this is such a mess." And the Lord's sitting right there next to you going, no, tell me more. How are you really feeling? Well, I just feel like the Lord has abandoned me. No, just keep talking. We try to explain Jesus to Jesus. We can look right at him and not see him. So Jesus responds. He said to them, how foolish you are, and how slow to believe all that the prophets have spoken. Let's pause there for a second. How foolish you are. Can we go back one slide? How foolish you are. Now, this is an important moment because when you hear this, when you like you read this, you know, on the screen and stuff, you imagine this moment. What does the voice of Jesus sound like in your head? That'll actually tell you quite a bit about how you imagine God. Is it like, you foolish? How slow to believe you are? Ah! So disappointed with you. Why can't you get it? You know, sounds like that bad parent or that bad uncle or that you know, that coach that, or whoever. Sometimes we hear that. I really don't think that's the tone that Jesus used. Do you? He's looking right at them. He knows they don't get it. And he might even be giggling on the inside just because of the irony of this moment. How foolish you are. And how slow to believe. Now, the literal Greek in there says, how slow of heart to believe. So the King James and the ESV and a few other translations translate it that way. How slow of heart. See, that tells us something about the conundrum that the disciples find themselves in, because it's the same one we find ourselves in, right? There are times we know these things about God. But it takes a while for our hearts to catch up to what we know. We have a divided heart. We kind of know it, but we don't really know it. You know what I mean? We know it, but our hearts are slow. It takes a while for our belief to catch up to the evidence. It takes a while for our souls, our internal being, to catch up to what we already know is true. How foolish you are. Like, you know this, but you don't know this. And how slow of heart to believe. And then let's keep reading. Did not the Messiah have to suffer these things and then enter his glory? And then, beginning with Moses and all the prophets, Jesus explained to them what was said in all the scriptures concerning himself. So as they approached the village where they were going, so if this was El Kebaba, that would be about 3.5 miles to the northeast of Jerusalem. Jesus, he just continued like he was going to keep going. But they urged him strongly, stay with us, for it is nearly evening. The day is almost over. So Jesus went in to stay with them. I want to pause there for a moment. And this here's some speculation. So test everything I say against the scriptures. This is me guessing on something. I think I know who that second disciple is. See, one of the witnesses to the crucifixion was a woman named Mary Clophas, which in some Greek translations can mean Mary of Cleophas. So that might have been Cleophas's wife. That might have been Cleophas's daughter. But it would sure explain why they have a home together. And it also might explain why at this moment in the story, this dear disciple is not named. Because at this moment, you guys remember, like when if you're trying to retell the story, if this would make the majority of the early witnesses of the resurrection women. And because in this moment, gender doesn't change the story, I think Luke might have chosen to omit that one little detail. Now, I could be completely wrong on that. But if that's true, this Mary Clophas, she's recorded as being one of the last people to leave the site of the crucifixion. She's one of the reasons why we know all the details about the crucifixion, because a few women stayed till the very bitter end. So they enter into the house. Let's pick up the story. This is just amazing. So Jesus went in to stay with them. Verse 30. When he was at the table with them, he gave thanks, broke it, and began to give it to them. Does that start to sound familiar to you? By the way, that would be a very strange thing for a guest to do at somebody else's house. So this guest shows up, starts acting like the host at their own table. So while he was at the table with them, took bread, gave thanks, broke it, and began to give it to them. And it was right then that their eyes were what? Opened. And they recognized him. And he disappeared from their sight. Okay. So they asked each other, were not our, what's the word? Hearts, you who are slow of heart to believe, won't our hearts burning within us while he was on the road and he opened the scriptures to us? Like they're looking at him, they're hearing him speak, and they're like, I know, I just don't know. And they crossed the line of faith. Weren't our hearts burning when he said this to us? And so they got up at once and went and returned to Jerusalem. So now it's right about dusk. It's right around dinner time, and they're making their way back to Jerusalem. They found the 11 and those with him assembled together, and they said, it's true, the Lord has risen and appeared to Simon. That's another one of those quirks in the resurrection story, because maybe Jesus appeared to Simon Peter and it just didn't record it for us. Maybe this is stuff that Cleophas is just kind of making up in the moment. Again, this is one of those things that's just one of those authenticity markers of the gospel account. It wouldn't be in there if this was some professional story writer trying to build up something that would reinforce something that was imagined by the early church. So then the two told what had happened to them on the way and how Jesus was recognized by them when he broke the bread. And while they were still talking about this, Jesus himself stood among them. Ba-bing! Maybe he didn't make the ping sound. But you can believe that the moment he appeared, there were some sounds. Can you imagine? You're in this closed meeting and suddenly, here's Jesus. He stood among them and said to them, peace be with you. Probably because all they were feeling in this moment was chaos. Peace be with you. So as we find ourselves this Easter, could it be that Jesus is a lot closer than you think? That for some of us, we have been walking with Jesus, and Jesus has been right there next to us for a long time, and it's sometimes so hard to see him. How slow of heart. How slow to believe. See, my hope is that by hearing these resurrection stories, and I hope that this is just the beginning of your inquiries into this, that you'll look for yourself. You'll do some of the detective work. You'll put the pieces together. Because the resurrection, my dear friends, is a historical fact. It's not just an inspirational tale. As hard as it is to believe that someone came back from the dead, it is historical fact. We see it in the internal evidence of the scriptures because of the complexity of the story, because of the strangeness and the fine details of the story, the eyewitness accounts of the story. We see it in the archaeological evidence. Do you realize there are more copies, fragments of the New Testament than any other document from ancient history? It is absolutely unparalleled. So we have strong confidence that what we have in our Bibles today is a faithful rendering of what was written by the apostles. And we have the other historical evidence of those people who in their own time were nobodies. They were fishermen. They were tax collectors. These are blue-collared, uneducated workers. These people, you know, the 12 that Jesus called the apostles, but also the hundreds of other people that witnessed Jesus after his resurrection, every one of them would either die or risk death rather than deny what they saw on that day and the 40 days that followed. Every single one of them. Who would die for a lie? And yet so many did. The resurrection is historical fact, and it's something that we can put our faith in. We can cross the bridge, if you will, of belief and say, this is a reality that can carry my weight. This is a reality that I am willing to put my hope in and my faith in. And so what I would invite us to do as we look to apply this to our own lives, in just a moment, Jeanette's going to lead us in a song. It's kind of like a familiar praise song, a worship song. I would invite you, if this is something that maybe the Holy Spirit is inviting you to do in these moments, whether this is for the first time, or maybe in a renewed way, or maybe this is something that has been part of your life for a long time, but you just want to say, I just feel like I need to go public with this. I want to invite you to do something that might seem a little strange. Ooh, cool, that's. But it could be a really powerful moment for you and for the people around you. I want to invite you to just come walking on up and just walk across the bridge. The resurrection is real, and I believe. I'm gonna put my feet where my faith are. I'm gonna let this historical truth become personal, and I'm gonna let it change me. Jesus, I believe. I believe in the resurrection. I believe in new life. I believe that one day, because I put my faith in you, I'm going to be resurrected too. I look forward to the new heaven. I look forward to the new earth. I look forward to having a body like Robbie's again, where I can eat all those pizzas and not get sick. I look forward to what you are going to do in my life. I'm not just going to hold my faith out there. I'm going to hold it in here. Jesus, I believe. Because I once was lost. But what? Sing with me. But now I'm found. I was blind, but now I see. So I invite us to stand in song, and then as we're singing, if the Lord's moving on your heart, I just invite you. Invite you. Walk across the bridge. If you're seeing a friend, walk across the bridge. Cheer him on, okay? Cheer him on.